Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the regular season is nigh, and the Detroit Lions are about ready to start the 2024 season.
It's weird because it feels like it's been a long time, but it also feels like it's been a shorter amount of time because it
Well,
has, right?
yep, the shortest break we've seen.
So in some ways it's like, well, I feel like they just wrapped up, but I also feel like, man, it's been a long 6 months.
Right. So it has been a long 6 months, and we haven't done one of these preview shows in a long time. As you mentioned before we got started, it'll be like trying to ride a bike again. So we'll have some hiccups, but we'll get there. We'll get this going right. Luckily, the opponent is the Los Angeles Rams, a team the Lions have played 3 games that count ago, right? If you go back in time, they faced off in round 1 of the playoffs, the wild card round. Of course, Detroit coming away with victory there. I don't think we have to remind anybody of that. I think everybody listening is well aware of that.
It's interesting for the rant from the Rams' point of view. It was the last team that the Lions are the last team that they played.
Right.
So it's a quick turnaround for them, same opponent, even though and even though they're familiar with one another. Obviously, the layers go way back, knowing players going in between teams and co and front offices being familiar with one another. But like, even as intimately as these two teams know each other, there's still a lot of changes that happened in the offseason. And
Right.
a couple big ones for the Rams that happened on their defense. Lions spent a lot of money investing in their defense. So the defensive adjustments that these two organizations have had to make could present two really different teams. I think for the most part, the offenses are going to be what they were. That what we saw last year in the playoffs, but there'll be little tweaks and stuff like that here and there. But for the most part, it'll be the defenses that are really going to be the sides of the ball that are going to be what we aren't familiar with.
And a very noteworthy move of one player from the Lions to the Rams.
Yes. Yep.
We'll hit on all that as we get going. Let's get into it, like how we always do, starting with the transactions. And since the last time we spoke on, in podcast form, there haven't been any. There's still 52 players on the active roster. It's surprising to you or not?
It's not surprising to me for a couple of reasons. One of them we talked about last time was the fact that you don't want to put a veteran into that 53rd spot just to put him into that spot because then his salary becomes guaranteed. So and so that's one part of it. But the other part is I really think they were waiting to see or are waiting to see how DJ Reader plays out. Like if he is further along than they anticipated and he's actually able to play, they may not need to make a move to maybe elevate Kyle Pecko and they might make a different decision instead. So in my opinion, I still think Pecko is probably going to be elevated whether Reader plays or not, but I think the DJ Reader influence here has maybe delayed a potential move. Maybe the competition at wide receiver has delayed a potential move, but it would also wouldn't surprise me if they don't make a move at all because a lot of guys got to be inactive anyways, and they're not just going to make a move just to make it. They're going to make it, if they do make a move, it's going to be for a specific purpose, and they'll have, very clear intent on what they're trying to accomplish.
All right, flipping over to the injury report. Wednesday is just a walkthrough. Thursday's regular practice. Probably be the shortest injury report of the season. They usually get much longer than this. Surprisingly, the first name on here is not the name you would expect. You would think it would be Frank Ragnow.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. So when we were tracking injured players, there were 15 players that were injured at the end of training camp that all made the active roster. So 15 guys we were keeping an eye on. So when I was prepping the injury article, I had all 15 of them laid out. And I'm like, all right, well, where am I going to slot them in? And then it comes out and there's only three names on the list, and Frank isn't one of them. So yeah, a bit of a surprise that the injury list is so light, I think credit goes to the Lions medical staff, trainers, and whatnot, because they had a pretty good plan and executed it in order to get the majority of the players that were injured back to full health for the regular season.
All right. Defensive tackle DJ Reader, you already mentioned him. Limited in both days of practice from the, talking about Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know, do you want to add anything?
I think it's encouraging because the target date for him was always going to be, was always week two. And so the fact that he's even getting limited practices in and they're testing him, there's potential. My gut is I still think he might not play. That's just my gut, knowing on how they treat players returning from injury. I think I might also be like bracing myself for him. You know, I don't want to get excited thinking he's going to play and then, you know, get upset when he doesn't. So I think I'm maybe subconsciously bracing myself by anticipating him not playing.
Safety. Ify Mufanwu, ankle injury, limited both days of practice, last 2 days of practice.
Now, it's interesting because they practiced on Tuesday unofficially, and the media got to see those, and Ify was not there, but then he was there the last two. So that's encouraging. That's a good sign because he has been dealing with as the Free Press reported, it's an Achilles injury. Lions listed as an ankle injury. Same basic area, right? But it's a slow recovering process for him right now. And they're saying that, you know, he could come back at any time, but they don't know exactly when because it has been moving so slow. So if he's able to get back, I think that's just it's another bonus. If he missed, wouldn't surprise me at all. At the same time, if he returned, I think, you know, the same thing. I would be equally unsurprised, but I am, again, like with Reader, leaning towards not expecting him to be out there.
All right. Last one, safety, Lauren Strickland, thumb. He did not practice either day.
So he had like a cast on his hand in the third preseason game. And I'm wondering if he hurt his thumb, or at least it was some sort of wrap. We haven't talked to Dan Campbell about Strickland or his thumb, or really, you know, we don't have anything official, but I seem to remember him having some sort of cast or brace on his hand in the third preseason game that he played through. So it's possible that they just decided to rest him. It's possible he aggravated and it got worse. It's possible maybe he needed something done medically to get that. So no practice this week at all is a pretty good sign he's not going to play. He's a little bit further down the depth chart anyways. They would have liked they like his availability for special teams, but I don't think you're pressed for that. And so I don't think there's any need to rush him if he's not ready. If he returns to practice on Friday, he still might be a guy that, you know, is inactive just to be safe with him.
All right, that's it for the little details. Let's move on to the game. So this is the Rams preview. Lions favored by 4.5, according to are you checking with FanDuel or DraftKings?
It's FanDuel now for Pride of Detroit. DraftKings was our sponsor the last two seasons, and DraftKings decided to stop their sponsorships. And so
stop using their name over and over again.
Yeah, well, and so now
you should say it's not FanDuel, and now it's
well, and now and FanDuel picked it up, and so it's interesting because FanDuel had them at 3.5 to start the week, and then it changed to 4.5 today.
Fans plowing money on the Lions.
Well, there was also a significant starting cornerback on the Rams that got put on IR.
Right, right.
And so that also plays a factor into this as well. So we'll get to that in a minute, but we've seen the lines shift on Thursday here. And depending on how things shake out, maybe it stays there, or maybe, like you said, the betting lines kind of drive things a little bit, but it was a full point jump when that corner went on IR today. I thought that was very interesting.
All right, to no surprise to anybody listening, games on Sunday night, 8:15 Eastern time. So that is slotted in the NBC Sunday night game, the nationally televised game, although all these games are technically nationally televised now, at Ford Field. NBC crews, I mentioned Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, Melissa Stark is on the field. Things have changed. Remember my favorite year as an old person when it came to Lions start times was that 3 years ago when every
Oh,
game
everything
started
was at
at 1
one.
on Sunday, except for the 1 12:30 p.m. game on a Thursday. Those were the days. They're long out the window. We're going to be watching games all over the time slots, and this is the first one out of the ordinary Sunday Night Football at 8:15.
It's, I think the first month is like really is tricky because you got 8:15 this week, and then 1 o'clock next the week after. Then you have a 4 o'clock start the week after that. Then you have Monday Night Football the week after that. So then it's a bye week, and then you kind of settle into like that Sunday time slot, most of them at 1. Then you have two Thursday night games. Then you have a potential flex to then you have another Monday night game and that potential flex late in the season as well. And it just so it gets a little tricky at the beginning and the end. But yeah, right out the gate, 8:15 Sunday night football. Hey, it's another big stage for the Lions. Last year, obviously, they opened up the season on
On
Thursday night.
tonight.
Yeah, on Thursday night, and then they beat the Chiefs. And so now I think they were the underdogs, and now here we are a year later. They're still in a
The
pretty
target
prominent
on their
spot
back.
with the target on their back, exactly.
Tirico Collinsworth, good to the Lions the last
Yeah.
two times they were in the booth, both
Yeah, they did
wins.
both playoff games they did, right? And so they
First two
were the
playoff
first
games,
two
yeah.
playoff games. And so they were very complimentary. And I am fully expecting this stadium to be rocking and them to very quickly bring up how impressive it was in the playoffs. My goodness, Sean McVay cannot shut up about how impressed he was in the playoffs about it. He is like every time he's on television, talking to someone that isn't, his LA, Rams beat, he's talking about that environment in Detroit being such a fun one to play in.
All right. Referee Adrian Hill, sixth season as an NFL ref. Last year, 11.35 flags per game, right about average. There's been some complaining about illegal formations, penalties tonight. The Chiefs, Ravens game, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of that. I would see if we get a big boost in penalties called in week one because everybody's settling in.
Maybe. I think the Lions have been they've it's hard to tell. Like, it's hard to base anything off the preseason, right? Because you had a bunch of guys playing that really weren't going to be playing during the regular season. So a lot of these starters that we're seeing haven't seen the field. So there's bound to be a little bit of rust. So I wouldn't surprise me to see a few more flags than you would expect.
All right, talking about the Rams' key additions in free agency, the big one, left guard Jonah Jackson coming from the Detroit Lions, tight end Colby Parkinson, cornerbacks Tre'Davious White and Darius Williams.
Jonah's obviously the big one, right? He can play center, he can play guard. They're actually shifting him to center, and we'll
Yep,
talk about
this
that
week.
when we break down the offensive line. That's part of his flexibility, part of his appeal. It will be interesting to see how the Lions attack him. I fully expect them to treat him just like anybody else, right? They'll, give him hugs after the game and stuff like that, but I expect Aleem to try and punish Jonah. You know what I mean? And a lot of people talk about, the fact that Jonah knows the Lions offense and, the Lions know that. So they're adjusting play calls and certain things that they do to try and counter that. But I do think there's something to be said for the fact that the Lions defense also knows how Jonah plays and they know his weak spots. And so there's a little bit of there's a lot of familiarity, and so a little bit of gamesmanship that'll be happening there. Darius Williams used to play for the Rams, left for Jacksonville, and then returned. Both him and White were the expected starters at corner, both veterans. And then Parkinson is he is the starting tight end now that Tyler Higbee is because Tyler Higbee is still on PUP after injuring his knee in last year's playoff game.
All right, key losses. They have a huge key loss. Defensive tackle Aaron Donald, one of the best to ever play the game. He's retired. Linebacker Ernest Jones, safety Jordan Fuller, center former Spartan Brian Allen.
Yeah, Donald's a big one, right? Like, so they have to replace him, and the way they replace him is by volume instead of just trying to one for one and try and go after some big name defensive tackle. They decided to invest in a lot of different guys. They drafted two defensive tackles. They drafted two defensive ends just in this draft class alone. And they were planning for Donald's retirement when they started drafting depth on the interior previous couple seasons. And so it's going to be more replacement by volume. They've changed their front a little bit to adapt to their personnel. And again, we'll break all that down in a little bit. The Ernest Jones situation is such a mess. He was in the final year of his contract, and the Rams basically said, we don't want to pay the money that you probably are going to require. And so they said, you know, we're probably going to end up parting ways at the end of the season. Both Jones and the Rams front office kind of agreed on that, and they tried to work something out, couldn't get it done, a deal. And then they said, all right, well, we'll probably just part amicably at the end. And then all of a sudden they decide, hey, if we're going to get rid of him eventually, why not just get rid of him now? And so they decide to trade him, and there's drama about them suggesting that he wanted to be traded, and then him saying no, and then them backing off and then saying, oh yeah, no, he didn't want to be traded. And so it's very interesting. I don't know if you saw the video that was going around with McVay snapping at reporters over the whole thing. It was, no. It's a little bit of drama going on. And, I mean, look, Jones was their captain. He was one of their defensive captains.
Right.
He led the team in tackles. Mm-hmm. He was the only off the ball linebacker that was drafted. All the linebackers on their team right now are all undrafted guys that they're developing. And then he gave them some blitz capability, and that's something that's probably gone now. And so, but I guess they didn't like the fit. A lot of Rams analysts aren't sure exactly why they did it, other than just the fact that if it's going to happen, Les Snead tends to think if it's going to happen, why wait? And so it could just be them getting impatient. And so that move gets made, and they vacate one of the best players they have in the middle of their defense, who was, you know, lining up right behind the anchor in the middle of their defensive line. And so, yeah, you got a couple of big spots in the middle that are potential areas to exploit for the Lions. Jordan Fuller was the center of their secondary, and he's gone. And then Brian Allen's the center of their offensive line. But, you know, again, they kind of planned for that. So, but their defense, you basically lost your three guys up the middle.
And Jones and Fuller were the two leading tacklers, right, for the team.
Yeah.
Last year, Aaron Donald tied for the team lead in sacks. Oh, wait, no, he didn't. No, Kobe Turner had more sacks. Forget about that. So,
but if you look at PFF scores, Aaron Donald and Jones were two of the top three.
Yep. Right. In the draft. So you mentioned it, like how they've been using the draft to backfill for Donald's departure. Mm-hmm. Round one, they picked Jared Verse. I believe he was from Florida State, right?
Yep.
Round two, also picked defensive tackle Braden Fiske from Florida State as well.
Correct.
All right. Did I just list them all off, or do we go one by? Do you want to go one by one?
It doesn't matter.
We should, because they're going to be involved in when we go through each position anyway. So I'll blast through them. Third rounder Blake Corum out of Michigan. We're all well aware of him. Round three, safety Cameron Kitchens. Round five, defensive end Brennan Jackson. And in round six, they have four picks: defensive tackle Tyler Davis, kicker Joshua Carty, wide receiver Jordan Whittington, and center Bo Limmer. In round seven, they picked offensive guard KT Leviston.
And there's a lot of guys that they kept. All of those guys are still around. Plus, they've added a lot of UDFA guys that have stuck around as well. They have a surprising number of rookies on this roster. They even picked up a waiver claim on a rookie running back, even though they drafted Blake Corum. So they have two rookie running backs on their 53. So in total, it looks like four offensive rookies. And then one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. 10 rookies on defense. That's a ton. So you're
I don't
talking
know.
about,
It's not insane, you know.
but 14 rookies in total on your 53? That's a lot. That's a lot. So, and then I guess the only, I guess Levinson is on IR, but the other guys are all kind of around in some capacity. Most, I think they might all be on the roster. Yeah. So, oh yeah, no. Plus the kicker makes 15. So 15 rookies. That's a ton of players that I wasn't expecting to see, to see on his team that is, was playoff bound and they are expecting to compete in for a playoff spot again. It's a lot of youth that you're leaning on.
All right, notable absences, left tackle Eric Jackson. He's been suspended. We'll talk about that in a minute. Tight end Tyler Higbee, you already mentioned that. He's on the PUP list. And another one you already mentioned, cornerback Darius Williams. He's on IR. He's placed on IR on Thursday. So I already mentioned that. So let's get into the Rams. Let's go offense first for the Rams, because it's easy. Quarterback Matthew Stafford. We're all well acquainted with him. One-time Super Bowl champion immediately. When he left the Lions franchise, he knows what he's doing. He's been with McVay. Now, what is this? This is year four.
Four, yeah,
He's been,
four.
yeah, that's right, because it's been 4 years of the new program here. So he's been gone 4 seasons. Obviously, led by Sean McVay, offensive coordinator is was it's a LaFleur. It's the
Yeah,
LaFleur's brother.
it's Mike
There's
LaFleur.
Mike LaFleur, there is no
Yep.
limit of nepotism when it comes to this Los Angeles Rams coaching staff. There's a couple more we'll hit on as we keep going.
Right, because I mean LaFleur and McVay both were in Washington under Shanahan, and then now he gets his brother. And yeah, there's just a lot of nepotism going on in the coaching ranks.
Not just on the offensive side of the ball.
No, not at all. So Stafford's backed up by Stetson Bennett. That was Carson Wentz last year, but Wentz departed. Jimmy Garoppolo was signed to be the replacement, and then Garoppolo got suspended as well. And so they're back to Stetson Bennett, who was drafted in the fourth round of the 2023 draft and missed his rookie season with some undisclosed issues. And apparently he's back and he looked good in the preseason from what I'm told, but I've never been a Stetson Bennett fan. I've always been a Matthew Stafford fan, and we all know what he can do. He's got weapons, and he's got a really good interior offensive line, but I think there's some questions about the tackles, and I wonder how much that could disrupt his ability to play. But he's still the guy that we know. Like he's going to throw a pass on, during the game. And we're going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember that because he has some magic still. And he's getting older, sure, but he's still very competitive. And he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so it's always a tough matchup when you have one of the top quarterbacks on the opposite side of you.
Maybe only getting better with age. Worth noting, Stafford and Stetson Bennett, both Georgia Bulldogs, running back position. Kyren Williams, the incumbent starter, came out of nowhere last year, only had like 100 yards plus rushing in his first year. He had 1,100 last year.
Yeah.
Blake Corum, we're well acquainted with Blake Corum locally as the running back for the defending champion, Michigan Wolverine, or well, now defending. He helped lead them to that championship last year. Another Detroit connection, Ronnie Rivers. Who's the son of Ron Rivers, former backup to Barry Sanders, and actually the took over for Barry once Barry retired. And then Cody Schrader, who I believe you mentioned, that's the other rookie running back on the roster along with Corum.
Schrader's interesting pass catcher. He's a guy that I think fits what they try and do well, but they really like the first three guys quite a bit. They like to rotate. They're going to try and rotate them as much as they can. Williams, as effective as he was and is, he has a bit of an injury history, and that's one of the reasons why they went and got Corum, is because they want to still keep Williams as their primary guy because he's proven that he can do it. But then they want a reliable bulldog behind him, and that's what Quorum is. And then Rivers offers them another unique skill player at the running back position as well. So they have some really nice depth, and they will run more than you think, right? Like it, you think McVay, you think 11 personnel and this West Coast, and he's just going to be throwing the ball and slinging it all over. But that's not the way it is anymore. They've introduced more gap concepts, and while they try to be quicker from from the end of the play to the next snap, they use the running game to create ball control, and they're not going to go away from it. So Lions are always and will always be a run stop defense first. They stop the run before they do anything else. And so it'd be a nice test for them, because if they can stop the run, then they can pin their ears back and try and go get Stafford. If they can't stop the run, then it could potentially be a long day. So expect them to really focus on Kyren Williams.
All right. Another good position grouping for the Rams of the wide receiver core. What is it? Five of these guys return for Stafford. He's got to be really comfortable with them all. The top two are two of the best in the league, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. Also have DeMarcus Robinson, Tutu Atwell, Jordan Whittington, and Tyler Johnson on the 53-man roster.
Yeah, Whittington is he was so Texas had three wide receivers come out of the draft last year, and everyone knows the top two guys, but Whittington was the third. He was the slot guy. He ended up going in like this, and I think in the sixth round. And so he's a guy who has played well, and they like to use the slot receiver. And so he'll have a chance to get on the field if Cooper Kupp, if they want to run a slot play and Cooper Kupp's not available, Whittington could be an option for them to get that done. Yeah, as you mentioned, they return multiple guys, and so lots of weapons for Stafford to throw to. Reliable weapons across the board, and Nacua is the big. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit more of a bully. He's dealing with an injury, but he's been practicing a knee injury, but he's been practicing in full this week, and so they fully expect him to play. Cooper Kupp was injured last time they played in the playoffs. They think he's fully healthy as well, so he should be a better player than what we saw last time in Detroit.
All right, tight ends. Colby Parkinson comes over from Seattle. Davis Allen returns. Hunter Long. Those are the three. They only got three on the 53-man.
Yeah, they like all three. I think Parkinson and Allen are serviceable, decent tight ends for what they try and do. Hunter Long is he's okay. But I like the first two, and I think when they're able to get Higbee back, it'll be a really stout group. But Parkinson, he'll give them some reliability.
Along the offensive line, it would be Alaric Jackson at left tackle, but he is suspended for Sunday. So we're going to see Joe Noteboom, I guess.
That's my guess too, yes.
He's a guy with plenty of experience in the NFL. All right, left guard Steve Avila, Jonah Jackson in the pivot, Kevin Dotson, right guard Rob Havenstein at right tackle.
So Havenstein has been injured, and he missed about a month of training camp. He started practicing this past week, and he started doing limited individual stuff, and then has slowly been getting worked in. He's been limited all week, and there's a real question around if he will be able to play. And if he doesn't, it would be Warren McClendon, who is former starter at Georgia for a couple of years. He will be the guy who probably has to step in if Havenstein can't go. Even if Havenstein can go, I wonder how game ready he'll actually be, because he hasn't done team drills up until maybe like he might do like one day of team drills before having to then go up against Aiden Hutchinson. It's a tough ask, even for a very seasoned veteran like Havenstein. So I think their tackles are awfully suspect in this game. With Jackson gone, Noteboom, like you said, is experienced, but he's definitely not as good as Jackson. Havenstein could be hobbled, and if he's not hobbled and McClendon plays, I think McClendon is a lesser quality player as well. So both these tackles are real positions of weakness that I expect the Lions to attack. And so there's a real opportunity here for Aiden Hutchinson and Marcus Davenport. And the reason I say Marcus Davenport is because the Rams run 11 personnel. And to counter that, the Lions have run a lot of, they'll have to run a lot of sub packages. Last year against the Rams in the playoffs, they were in sub packages 100% of the time. Okay. Every snap was a sub package snap. So the Lions are probably going to run a lot of sub package in this one. And in their sub package look, it's Davenport and Hutchinson are the guys who are the primary pass rushers. Now, will Davenport need time off and you might see James Houston? Yeah. Might see Josh Pascal? Sure. Maybe even drop Derek Barnes down there and kind of have that Sam. I expect that as well. But I don't expect Hutchinson to really leave the field that often. I expect it to be Davenport that maybe plays half the snaps. And then you see Pascal Houston and maybe Derek Barnes getting in on the other ones. But I also expect the Lions to use some of their base where you see a true Sam out there as well. And so there's some options that they're going to have. But primarily, I think it's going to be Hutchinson and Davenport. And in my opinion, that might be your best pass rushing duo because they're big. They can both stop the run. They can both pass. And that will allow you to stay in nickel and then match up from a coverage standpoint. And you keep some good pass rushers out there. So could be a little bit of a rotation opposite Hutch. But Hutch is a guy who plays 90, 95% of the snaps. I expect him to play a lot. And I don't think it matters where he lines up. If he lines up in their base looks, he would line up over Noteboom. In their sub package looks, he would line up over Havenstein. I don't think it matters. I think the way that these tackles are kind of banged up, or maybe you're playing replacement players, it's a great opportunity for Aiden Hutchinson to kick the season off on the right foot.
All right, backing up, going back to the wide receivers. Because glazed over Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, we as a show really kind of dig into all the other nooks and crannies on the roster and kind of leave the stars behind because everybody's well aware of the stars.
Sure.
But, you know, this is an important matchup for the Lions defense.
Yeah.
How do you think they're going to handle the two of these guys?
Yeah, I think they're going to play it straight up, right? I think you're going to see a lot of Amik Robertson over Cooper Kupp. The reason that I believe they shifted to including more corner nickels, you know, like they specifically brought in Robertson and Emmanuel Mosley in order to have a cornerback at the nickel spot. Remember last year it was Branch, right? So you had three safety looks all the time, three safety looks all of last year. This year they wanted to have an actual corner who gives you more corner agility, more corner ability to cover. And so that's Robertson right now. And so Amik, I feel like this is a prime reason why you brought Amik Robertson in, is you want him to be able to line up over a receiver who's a good slot receiver, and you want a corner level cover ability player with corner level coverage ability to be able to mark him. And then with Davis and Terrion on the outside, I expect them just to play sides. So that means sometimes Nacua is going to line up over Terrion, sometimes he's going to line up over Carlton Davis. And I don't think they're going to care which one does which. And so this is a big game for Amik. And then you're going to have the other guys just have to raise their level up, level of play up. Big thing will be communication. Of the starting five, three of those guys were injured at different points during the season. All four of them were injured during at different points during the season or training camp. And so how can they communicate? How quickly can they get their communication level up to where it needs to be? If they can communicate well, that's going to be awesome. Then this is an improved talent team. And especially in the secondary, if they don't communicate well, they're going to have some struggles like they did in the past, but communication will be key. I don't expect Terrion to really, like, he's not a guy who really has, you know, big struggles, and he's a guy with a veteran mentality. But I really think Amik versus Kupp is going to be a really important matchup to watch, and I think they'll just take Nacua as he comes.
All right, just switching over to the defensive side of the ball, which is coordinated by Chris Shula. Mentioning the nepotism among the coaching ranks.
grandson of Don Shula.
Across the front, we got a cut. We're going to see a couple of rookies. I'll do the full front seven because how they have this laid out is kind of a 3-4 look. But they have, go ahead.
I was going to say it's actually like a 3-3-5 base. They do a lot of nickel, so you're going to see a lot of three man downs and then three linebackers and then five secondary players.
All right, so we'll start with the front, the defensive line. Braden Fiske, Bobby Brown III, Kobe Turner. And behind them, Tyler Davis, Neville Gallimore, DeJuan Johnson.
The three down, the three starters that you just mentioned there, they are so Brown is their nose tackle, right? So he's like 325 or something like 325 pounds, something like that. But both Fiske and Turner are both under 300. They're both like in the 290 range. And so you're a little bit light with those guys. If you compare them to like the Lions offensive line, you're talking about guys that are ranging between 315 and 335, depending on which lineman you're looking at. So they're going to give about 25 to 45 pounds up in weight. And so that's a big advantage for the Lions, especially in the run game. And so for the Lions to want to, for a team who wants to establish the run, having lighter defensive linemen in front of you is really just a benefit for the Lions. And I think that will really help them stand out. When they get into situ now, they're not going to be able to keep Bobby Brown on the field all the time. He's a big nose tackle. Those guys can't play, full games, right? So
Right.
you're going to have to shift to fronts where you're using just Fiske and Turner. And then you're going to have your two kind of outside pass rushers in more D-end roles. And that's fine. But then when that happens, you're not going to have a 300-pound defensive lineman on the field, period. And again, that's a massive weight advantage and for the Lions. And it's not like the Lions aren't athletic. They have a very, they're big and athletic. That's what makes them such a great offensive line is that they can do both, right? They can gap, they can zone, they can power, they can overwhelm you, and they can out-athlete you. They can do it all. And so when you bring undersized guys that are athletes but lack power, boy, that's a big benefit for the Lions when they want to try and run the ball. And so I expect them to do that early. I expect the Lions to try and establish the run. I expect them to bully the Rams defensive front and try and wear them out. And if they can wear them out, then that's going to eliminate their ability to pass rush later in the game. And so I expect a lot of runs and a lot of just muscling early in this game to try and beat up on a smaller defensive front. But look, if you allow Turner to pass rush, like you said, he led the team in pass rush last year. He's a very good pass rusher.
Yeah,
Yeah,
but
there.
he was also helped out by the guy who lined up next to him.
Absolutely. 100%. I agree with that. So you don't have that dominator. And so it is going to make Turner's life harder. But essentially, it's a five technique nose tackle, five technique type of front, or maybe you do like a four eye nose, four eye. But these down defensive linemen, they have some pass rushing chops, but the hardest part for them is going to be can they stand up to the beating that the Lions offensive line may deliver to them?
All right, linebacker core. Byron Young, Omar Spates, Christian Roseboom, rookie Jared Verse, Nick Hampton, Jacob Hummel, Troy Reader, Michael Hecht, Brennan Jackson. They've got, what, nine linebackers on the roster?
So it's a mix, right? It's a mix of
They're
like pass rushing
edge
linebackers and
rushers.
off the ball. So if we look at just like the pass rushers, that's Jared Verse and Byron Young. Young was a high ceiling guy, got drafted in the third round over in 23. Decent rookie year, still developing. I
Eight
think he is
sacks.
He's more of a specialist, but like, I think there's potential. He's not really a dominator. I think Verse can really be a dominator. He's got a lot of skills, a lot of range, can play the run, can play the pass. He can do a lot of really good things that I think will really help them, be able to take their defensive pass rush up a level. So like, there's going to be times when Young and Verse are basically drop into like defensive end type roles when you lose a nose tackle. And then when that happens, you're going to have two off the ball linebackers. When you have the nose tackle on the field, you'll probably have just one off the ball linebacker. And which linebackers they play, which off the ball linebackers they play, I think is a bit up for debate. Spates is a guy they like a ton, and that's a guy that they want to start. But this week, McVay announced that it was going to be Roseboom and Reader as the starters, and they're hoping to be able to get Spates on the field. So I think most people are leaning towards Spates because he seems like he's the better player. But Reader and Roseboom are the guys that were announced as the starters with Ernest Jones gone. I don't think either of those guys are really starter level players. Like, they're not guys that you're going to look at and be worried about. I think Roseboom is he's okay. He's a little bit under average, but he's not terrible. I think Reader has some problems, and that's maybe why you could see Spates jump into the ahead of him in the rotation, especially if they like Spates' ceiling. So you got four linebackers that are technically starters, but it's really like, you got those outside pass rushers and then two off the ball guys. Sometimes it'll just be one because they are going to play a ton of defensive backs.
Now you bring up that you're going to have Roseboom and Reader in the middle, and here's those are two guys who both started, five, six games for the Rams at linebacker. Whereas you look at the Lions and who they're going to be starting at linebacker. Let's go off the ball only, even though Derek Barnes has 13 starts himself, but I'm sure Byron Young had a bunch of, yeah, he had 16 starts there, so it's kind of a wash. But you're going to have Anzalone who started 16 games, Jack Campbell started 12 games. Not having a lot of starting experience, although being a starter is not super important, but these were guys who weren't playing a ton last season in the first place.
Yeah, they're basically undrafted guys that they've been trying to develop, and they're serviceable. That's really about it. I mean, it's a weak spot, right? Like, if I'm the Lions, I'm starting by trying to run the ball, right? I want to try and beat up that front, and then if I start beating up the front, then I'm going to play action. And if I can play action, I'm going to get Rosenboom and Reader to freeze on that play action, especially if I'm showing well against the run. If I get them to freeze, now I have two weapons against the slot who can attack them, and that's both Laporta and Amon-Ra. And then if they start adjusting to that and they go like into a zone, well, great. Now I'm going to start leaking my backs out into the field, and then I'm going to start running J-Mo deep. If I run J-Mo deep and I start busting your zone, now you got to start making a choice. Where do I want to pass off my responsibilities, and do I need to spread my secondary out a little bit more? If I have to spread my secondary out, now I've got to spread out my linebackers, and now all of a sudden the linebackers have a bigger area to cover, and now I can attack them again with Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown. So when you have a weak spot in the middle of your defense like this, there's lots of different ways that you can exploit them. I mean, you can run Texas routes at them. You can run just crossers. You can run layered routes and force the linebackers to make a choice up or down. Like, and you just pick the one that the linebacker doesn't go to. So like, there are lots and lots of ways when you're weak in the middle that you can get exposed. And I expect that. Like, that's why the Lions built the team that they have, to attack the middle of the defenses that they play. And I mean, on paper, you have a light defensive front in a weak middle linebacking group that just plays perfectly into what the Lions want to do. The Lions want to run the ball and beat you up over the middle. And that seems to be where the Rams are the weakest.
All right, going to cornerback, we got Kobe Durant, Tre'Davious White, Quentin Lake, as well as Josh Wallace, Russ Yeast, and Charles Woods.
So with Darius Williams on IR, it'll probably be Kobe Durant. He's been their kind of cornerback three throughout camp, but he's also dealing with a hamstring injury. And if he can't go, the expectation is that it'll probably be either UDFA Josh Wallace, who played at Michigan last year as a transfer, or it would be UDFA Charles Woods. So they're really putting a lot of eggs in their hat, hoping that Durant can play. And if he can, it's a potential tough matchup if you get him squared up against JMO, right? And so it's another big blow to their defense to lose a guy that they were counting on to start. So, and if they can't play Durant, now you're losing your next guy in line as well. So Durant has been limited in practice both all this week. It's very possible he plays, and then, you know, they'll have, you know, the level of talent won't drop that significantly, but he's still not as good as Williams was. And unfortunately, he's on IR. And then Tre'Davious White, like, we all know him from his time in Buffalo, but like, he's had ACL injuries and he's coming off an Achilles injury. So like, is he going to be the guy that they expect him to be? So far the reports out of Rams camp is that he's been great. He fits in well with what they want to do, and he gives them some opportunity to run different styles of different zone coverages, different man coverages and stuff like that. But like, if you have a subpar guy on the opposite side of him, you know, he's only going to be able to be so impactful. So it's a pretty big blow to them to lose Darius Williams, and they better hope that Kobe Durant can play, because if not, they're turning to an undrafted rookie to step into a starting role.
All right. The safeties. Cameron Curl comes over from the Commanders. He's going to be paired with John Johnson III. Cameron Kitchens, Jalen McCullough also will be available.
So I didn't talk about Quentin Lake because he's basically, yeah, he's their third nickel, right? He's their third safety. He's their nickel starter. Essentially, if you want to think of how he is, he plays the Brian Branch role. Right, exactly, from last season. So Quentin Lake is going to be key for them, and they're going to hope to get him on the Lions slot guys. The problem is it's a pick your poison. Like, which slot guy do you want to try and put him on? Do you want to put him on Amon-Ra? Because that's a tough matchup. Or do you want to put him on Laporta? Well, that's also a tough matchup. So either way, he's going to have it's going to be a tough day, but that's really going to be one of the better matchups to watch is where does Lake line up? How do they use him? Are they going to try and have him in cover? Or are they going to try and have him live like at a linebacker level and then take one of the linebackers off the field or something, you know, keep so that they can keep the front bigger to try and stop the run. But Lake is kind of that multi-purpose player that gives them some flexibility in the defense. John Johnson is a guy who thrived with the Rams, left for the Browns, and then he struggled. And now he's back with the Rams again. And I don't know how he'll go. It'll be interesting to see where he's at. Cameron Curl is essentially your Jordan Fuller replacement. And then Kitchens is a guy who was one of the better safeties in the draft class that they got in the third round. So they've got some depth here at safety. And they're going to use a lot of them. And, you know, it certainly helps that Chris Shula was the secondary coach before he was promoted to defensive coordinator. So he knows what he has in those secondary players. And he's going to utilize, like I said, at least three safeties and two corners and, you know, maybe more. There'll be times when they're going into, you know, sub packages like dime and quarters and whatnot. So there's a lot of things that they can do, and he's going to lean heavily on that secondary. The kind of overall philosophy that I gather is that they're hoping the secondary can hold up long enough for the pass rush to get home, as opposed to the Lions, who have been, you know, historically a team that hopes the pass rush gets home so that they can help the coverage. And now, I mean, the Rams kind of have that opposite approach. And I mean, so do the Lions for that matter. But Yeah, this is an important unit for them, and losing this one of the starters in this unit could have a domino effect on this defense.
All right. Special teams. Kicker, you mentioned rookie Joshua Cardy from Stanford. He's got quite a leg on him. He's hit 41 of 45 field goals over the last 2 seasons for the Cardinal. Blasted a 61 yarder. He's also made several other 50 plus yard kicks. Ethan Evans is the punter. He was their punter last year. He's kind of a middling punter. Kyron Williams, punt returner. Well, at least that's what he's listed as here. He is
Yes, and
the
that's
most punt returns returning for the Rams. And that's a surprise to be using the running back's punt returner.
but that is something McVay confirmed this week. He said that they're going to use him as the punt returner. Even though he has the injury history, they still want to put him out there as the punt returner because they think like he gives them the best option. And they also feel like they have depth with Corum and Rivers. So they're willing to risk it by putting him out on punt returns. And then Corum will be one of their kick returners. And so they're really just utilizing those running backs on both special teams units.
How old is Sean McVay?
Oh, I don't know. He looks like he's like 30, but he's probably like in his mid to late 40s, I would say.
Right. So, yeah, when he was hired in 2017, youngest coach modern NFL history at 30 years old. So he's 37
Oh,
now.
he's
So
still
he's
in his
probably
late
a
30s.
little too young to have played Tecmo Super Bowl and know that if you start, if you have your starting running back as also the punt or kick returner, he's automatically going to get hurt. They just have him get hurt immediately. It's not the way to do things. I don't know, but I kind of like it. You know, I like when they use their better players when they throw them out there to return kicks and punts. I do like it.
Hey, I mean, everybody's got different system, and this is what they like to do. So it's I don't know much about their special teams beyond what I just told you there.
Yeah, well, because there was an Austin Trammell. He was the return man last year, no longer with the team, and nobody returned kicks last year. You know, like, so there's only a handful of kickoff returns anyways. They have Blake Corum. They have Jordan Whittington listed. Both of them are rookies. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, just the kickoff in general is going to be interesting to see over the first few weeks.
One other note I wanted to make. I'm sorry, do you have any more on special teams before I make this
Well,
final note?
the long snapper is Alex Ward, if you have anything to add about that.
I don't. I'm sorry. I've disappointed all the long snapper fans out there. No, the only other thing I was going to point out is do you remember Corey Durden? Corey
I
Durden was
remember Tyler Durden from the film Fight Club.
So a year ago, Corey Durden was a UDFA defensive tackle with the Lions. Him and Chris Smith were the two UDFA defensive tackles. And Corey Durden outplayed Chris Smith in a lot of during the preseason, not necessarily during training camp, but during the preseason. And when Durden was cut, it was a bit of a surprise that the Lions went with Chris Smith, and who they like and is back on the practice squad this year. But it was a bit of a surprise that Durden was let go. And a lot of people have asked where Durden ended up. Well, this is where he ended up. He actually made the 53-man roster initially when this 53-man roster was constructed. But when they claimed Schrader, Durden was the guy who got cut and then re-signed to the practice squad. But Durden is a guy who, like I said, a lot of people liked and wondered where he ended up. Well, this is where he is.
All right. First game of the year. You won last year of the picking, so you gotta
I did.
pick again. You
Now,
lead us off.
I'm going to be very like I know that I won last year, and so like I'm very happy about that. But I think I should point out the fact that you've won 3 times and we've tied 3 times. So it's not like I just happen to have that 1 year that I finally don't have a goose egg next to my name in season long victories. So I'm very happy to get off that schneid there.
No, and you gotta run with this momentum.
For me, I've gone back and forth on this game a little bit. I tell you what, I think the Lions as I when I was breaking down the Rams defense, I think I kind of gave it away. Like, I think the Lions match up offensively very well with the Rams defense. The Rams are weak in areas, the Lions are strong. And so I do think it lends itself to the Lions being able to win if this goes into a shootout, or win if it becomes a grinded out possession type game. So I'm certainly siding with the Lions. The question is I don't know exactly what my final score is. I've kind of wavered back and forth. And the score that I'm going to land on is a little bit bigger than I wanted it to be. But I'm going to end up saying 24-20 Lions.
All right, not a bad prediction. It's hard to see the Lions losing this game because, the crowd's going to be totally amped up coming off of everything that happened last year, and with the momentum they have coming into the season, and everything you pointed out, like the Rams have an undersized defensive front, Lions are bullies up front. Same thing, weaknesses at linebacker, or at least serviceability of linebacker. The issues the Rams are having along the offensive line. The Rams should be able to score. At the same time, Stafford has got his just a ton of experience. So even if he's not getting a long time to throw, he's going to be able to find open receivers. It's second nature to him now. So the Rams will probably be able to score against the Lions defense. And we still this could be their first game experience for all the Lions first stringers, although they do have extensive practice experience in playing against the Giants and all that. The only way I really see the Lions losing this game is if it's one of those wacky week one games, because there's always, a couple of games in week one
Sure,
where the
sure.
underdog wins and the underdog looks good, and it's like, oh, maybe there's something wrong with the Lions, and then it turns out, well, no, it's just the first game they just weren't ready. Maybe Zeitler hasn't gelled yet with the rest of the offensive line, or maybe the offensive line has kind of a weird game, and you can end up losing that way. But I don't see it happening. I'll give it a little bit higher scoring than you do. I got Lions 27, Rams 23, which I hope that wasn't the score of the playoff game. That sounds very familiar now.
No, it was 24-23.
24-23, that's right.
Well, we both have 4 points, 4 point victories.
Yeah, so it'll have to be on who gets closer to the Lions score.
Yep. So it'll, I think that's, I think we're just scared enough of Stafford and the receivers, to worry about them being able to keep pace.
Yeah, I mean they're good enough to beat the Lions.
Sure.
The Lions aren't going to win every game, right? And there's
Yeah.
going to be and teams that aren't going to be as good as them are going to beat them a couple of times. Happened last year with the Seahawks. Happened last year with the Cowboys. Happened last year with the Packers, arguably, although Packers are playing great down the stretch.
I don't see
Happened with the Bears, sorry.
I think the Rams offense is scary. I think the Rams defense is going to struggle, and they're still looking for their identity, and they don't match up well against the Lions. They have injuries. It's just, I think there's too many errors, or potential errors that the Lions can exploit. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm expecting both teams to score 4 times. The Lions, just one of them will be a touchdown instead of a field goal, and that'll be the difference for me.
All right, we got a bump in ratings, reviews in both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So thank you to the folks out there
Nice.
who added them. Nothing new in the written
Reviews.
word comments, yeah, but it doesn't matter. We appreciate it nonetheless. I don't know. This is gonna be a short one this week. Like we said, it's not the normal setup because we don't have to cover a game from last week.
Yeah, it's certainly most of these will be a little bit longer, but I think familiar opponent and not having the game to cover, that certainly takes a chunk out of what we would normally do here. We also just covered, what, 5 days ago, we just kind of went over the Lions pretty heavily. So I feel like I covered the things I wanted. Like, I tried to explain my matchups that I think are good, and I think we did. I'm pretty happy, even though I have no idea when we started this or how long we are into it. But I felt like we did good with this initial one. I'm happy with it.
Did you eat at Applebee's today?
Not yet. Have you seen the second commercial? There's the second
I
one.
seen portions of it. I came across it. I don't want to say I'm not ready to see it yet because that would mean that it's some sort of momentous thing. Like I just didn't feel like watching it yet. We'll see. I know people are going crazy over the first one, but
Yeah.
it was a bad commercial.
No,
I
but
get they're kind of supposed to be. Like that's the whole
yeah.
idea because that
Right.
kind of catches your attention. But
I think it's
good for Coach Campbell. You got to cash in now. Now's the time. He's not going to be
yeah.
on top of the world forever, sadly.
Second one's better. It's a little longer.
Okay.
It's a little bit more, you get a little bit more flavor of Dan Campbell. Like they add in a couple things that you would expect Dan to say type of stuff. And so I like it. I think there's could be more of these too, which should be fun.
Did you see his original commercial debut when he was playing with the Cowboys?
Yeah, he was on the farm or on the
Yeah.
horse ranch. Yeah.
He had to go take care of some Russell, which they really picked the right player. Who would
Oh
have
yeah.
known back then? I'm sure Cowboys fans were watching that back in 2002 or whenever, 2006, whenever that was, just going like, why Dan Campbell? Like, why him? Now everybody would watch that commercial and be like, oh yeah, of course they'd use Dan Campbell for this commercial.
yeah, I'm excited for football to be back, man.
It's fully back. We've gone through week zero and week one of college football. If you see behind me that the Ravens are playing the Chiefs
Yeah, they're at the
as we
half,
speak,
right?
so it's
Or
fully back. There's no stopping it now. Freight train's coming through.
we got a game on
And Canadian
Friday.
football's been going on for months.
Oh, I didn't know. I saw Betts landed back in Canada and then like had a sack like in his first game.
Good for, did you go back to BC?
I don't know. I just
Let
know
me
he
look this
went.
up. I
I just
should
know
have
he
been
went.
tracking this.
I know he went back to Canada and he got like at least he got a sack in his first game back, and so he just like it was like he never left type of thing. We have game Friday in Brazil, which
Yeah.
should be very interesting. The very populous São Paulo, or
What's it, Darius
São
Slay
Paulo.
getting in some trouble?
Oh, he is? I didn't hear about that.
Well, he said, like they said, he can't leave the hotel. Why are they sending us to somewhere so dangerous? Because that's what they're being told. And,
No.
you know,
Yeah.
he apologized. It's really no big deal. Just
Okay.
say whatever you want to say.
I do find it interesting though that the information coming out of Brazil is going to be interesting because they have a nationwide ban on Twitter. So like if you're the people that are in Brazil covering the game, like the reporters and stuff, they can't post to Twitter because it's unavailable. So I wonder if they will shift to a different platform or if there will be other ways for them to like communicate stuff out, or if we'll never even know and we won't know the difference because things will just happen organically like they always do. But bunch of college football on Saturday and then a bunch of big games on Sunday and of course capped off with the Lions. And so just football, football, football for the next 5 days. It's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be fun though. Lots to consume.
He's back with the British Columbia Lions, Matthew Betts is. It
Good for
doesn't
him.
have like nobody who's right. I know those teams get less coverage than the Lions do, but you think there would be a little blurb. You run into that story right away. Hey, Betts returns with sack in first game. You don't even see it. Whatever. Regardless.
Well, I should have been, I guess I should have paid closer attention, I guess. I mean, I saw it, I just didn't think to note it.
We talked about the Brazil game. Good thing the Packers have to make that 10-hour flight. Hopefully that'll wear them down a little bit. Although the Eagles are going to be just as worn down, doesn't really matter. Michigan's got a big game against Texas on Saturday. Welcome into the big house. Oh, now it's no, now, whatever.
Well, I don't, I mean, I don't know how that game is going to go. It's
Who
early
knows? They can win. Michigan can win. They have a good defense.
early season college football tends to be a little wonky, right?
Sure.
But you know, I think of the game, I didn't watch a ton of college football on Saturday. I did watch a couple games. I did watch Georgia wax Clemson, which was expected. And then I watched the Michigan game. That's really about I mean, everything else was just kind of like in passing. So, did you have a particular game that you liked?
No, I mean nothing that I liked, you know, that kind of got excited with the Fresno State Michigan game there until the last, you know, 7 minutes of the game. And you're
That
like a 16 to 10, 16 to 10, anything could happen. This is what happened in the Spartans game. Anything could happen from here. And
he had
anything did happen from there.
threw three interceptions on that last drive. That final one, Will Johnson, my goodness,
The
he's
nail in the
something.
coffin.
He is something. That he is an unbelievable corner. That Billy, like, he's what, 6, 7 yards off the ball to see that. I mean, the screen was telegraphed. Like, I mean, we knew it was, everyone knew it
Everybody
was.
saw what was coming there. The whole stadium knew what was coming there.
Well, yeah, but like,
The whole field.
still to get there was impressive. And then in stride and then house it. That was, well, it's a lot of fun. He's a good player.
That's great to see college football back. And it'll be just as great to see pro football back. It's a big weekend for you, Harry. I mean, between the Texas going to Ann Arbor and then the Lions playing on Sunday Night Football. I mean, come on.
I think game day, college game day is in Ann Arbor too, aren't
Yeah,
they?
and Big Noon. They're both there.
Oh
Or
boy.
not Big Noon. Whatever the Fox one's called.
Okay.
Their
I don't know.
kickoff, the same, their version of College Game Day also in Ann Arbor.
I did not know that one. It's gonna be cold too.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
It's very weird.
Out
Very
of nowhere.
heavy drop in temperature and then scoop back up. Have you seen the temperature? Did you notice the temperature in LA today was like 107 or something like that,
Oh,
or
really? Well,
109? Yeah. And
Phoenix has had a 100 plus degree temperature 100 days in a row. It's been warm.
I wonder, I do wonder how, if that'll have any impact. I don't think it will because the Lions are in a dome, right? But
Right.
I do wonder, like, to have a big temperature drop like that, if it does have any impact on the guys. I
I
don't think.
guess not.
I think usually it's the other way, right? Usually, if you go from cold to warm, you're
Right.
usually like dehydrating and stuff. But,
Because can you imagine, same thing with the Rams, right? Like if you go back to January here in Detroit, it was that week, if I remember correctly,
Oh yeah.
it
Yeah, it
was,
was
you know,
cold.
10 degrees that week. You know, it was between 0 and 10. It was, you know, it was cold week. Los Angeles, definitely 60, 70 degrees, you know, at that time of year. Like that's a huge temperature drop. Didn't affect that. They lost by 1 point. It's not like the changing. And just like that, remember the question, the dumb reporter question where they're like, hey,
Oh
how are you
yeah.
guys going to handle this? Was the Tampa Bay game? Like, how are you going to handle the cold of Detroit? Well, it's like it's only going to affect this on our walk into the building.
Yeah, I remember that. All right.
That's it. We're rambling now.
Now, yeah.
It's exciting. It's exciting to see what's going to happen Sunday. Really looking forward to it. And I know you are too. And I'm sure
I
everybody
am.
listening is too.
I am. I'm
So,
like wondering how early I have to get there because people are going to be
oh.
down there so early.
8 p.m. game, you're gonna have to be there. I don't know, 7 a.m. You get there good 13 hours before the game starts, probably the best bet for you.
Might be a good plan. It's
That's it. Oh.
Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say that's about it.
Yeah, that's all we got for this week. Let's end this now. Everybody's getting real bored. So that's it for us this week. Good luck to the Lions on Sunday. Everybody have a fun time, and until next time, let's go Lions.